Yes, on this brand new Saturday in the month of August, with me this morning, as promised, from the U of M, Laura Irish Hansen. Laura, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Denny. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. Thanks for asking. I hope you are, too, and all of your colleagues there at the U of M. And you, you office, like the other folks we chat with, they're at the Arboretum, right? Or am I wrong?
Yeah, yep. I am office up at the farm at the Arb, which is just absolutely beautiful. And my window looks out at the Red Barn. So pretty inspiring every
lucky
day.
Lucky you. Well, lucky us to have you here this morning. We appreciate the work. We're already getting, which is no surprise to you, we're already getting text messages. If you have the desire to call in and chat with Laura, great. Either way, you want to call, you want to send a text, just one number for either, 651-461-9226. A listener wants to know, I think it's a good question, with all this smoke in the air that we've experienced for quite some time, does this affect our plants, our shrubs, our trees, our whatever, tomatoes? Can it affect it? What do you think?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. And I was trying to find a fun resource that people would want to read more about. And thankfully, some of my wonderful colleagues, the fruit and vegetable team, they actually made a blog post on August 4th of 2021 all about what we know about how wildfire smoke can impact plants. Now, there's not a lot of research about that, just because we don't usually have wildfires that are directly next to our plants in our gardens, because that's a little different, right? Like the Canadian wildfires, that's happening very far away from us. So we're not going to see any residual ash clogging up the plants. And by clogging, I mean falling on the leaves, slowing
sure.
photosynthesis.
Well, that makes sense.
So if the biggest thing for the plants is it could potentially be impacted by the amount of ozone, which is all related to how I don't even know the term. I was about to say smokeologist, and I know that's not a word.
Could have fooled me.
Yeah, who knows? Really, it's all about the amount of ozone. And even for that, we're not really going to see any impacts to the plants themselves. So we're not going to see any direct negative impacts to our plants because of the smoke in the air. Saying that, it is much more important to protect yourself, because we do know there are impacts to humans from being exposed to the amount of smoke in the air. So please be careful out there. Don't do anything too strenuous.
Yes.
Follow all the guidelines.
And that is true. The weather folks are saying we should be cautious right through, might even be Monday morning. So be aware of that. Laura, we received a real early this morning a text from a listener that said, when should I stop fertilizing perennials and annuals plants?
Yeah, so that's a really great question. For the most part, perennials, you only need to be fertilizing them if you have a soil test that tells you that you need to be adding supplemental fertilizer or nutrients to them. For your annuals, if you are watering and they're in containers in particular, you should continue to fertilize, just because every time you water, some of those nutrients are going to wash out the bottom of the container. You can start slowing down that. Once we start having shorter days near the end of the month and into September is usually fine.
Okay, very good. Listeners sent this text in from Faribault. She said, I need to relocate some milkweed plants for a landscaping project. When are monarchs done with them? I don't want to cause any harm to the monarch's life cycle.
So the monarchs are going to be around for quite a while longer. That's kind of tricky. If you can, leave the plants and take seed from them and spread those for next year. That might be the safest thing to do, because then you won't be disturbing any of the monarchs that may be feeding later into the season.
All right. A lot of folks interested in that, and certainly the pollinators as well. We're glad to see questions like that. Let's grab a phone call. I think Marcia's on the horn, calling in from Freeborn, Minnesota. Good morning, Marcia. What is your question for Laura?
Good morning, guys. Say, we plant glads every year, and this year the shoots are coming up, and they kind of start to blossom, and then they have black spots on them, and the flowers wilted up, and just wondering, what are we doing wrong?
That's sorry to hear that about your gladiolus. So there are a few things that can cause black spots to occur, and you might be seeing some type of rot from it's actually could happen underground in the corm, or well, we colloquially call it the bulb, but it's actually a corm. It's a different type of structure. And that can cause the bottom to start becoming black and move up the stem. But really, it could just be an issue if you've been saving them from year to year that and planting them in the same spot. There might be something in the soil that's splashing up. There are a lot of different diseases that impact gladiolus. So I would try to, if you can, replace with disease-free plants. You can order those online or get them at your local nursery and then change up any of the soil or move your plants to a new area next year.
Okay. Question for Laura. Texter says, is it safe to spray Roundup or a similar product to kill vegetation in a mulched area around the trunk of a tree?
Definitely follow the label. So anytime you're working with pesticides, including herbicides like Roundup, make sure you are following the label because that is the law. For spraying around trees, just be really careful. You know, you don't want to get right up against the trunk. It's much better to actually hand weed around the base of any plants just so you're not potentially damaging them. It also depends on the age of the tree and the species. Some can handle a little bit more damage than others. But definitely, please follow the label. And there should be good instructions on there. And sometimes that means you have to peel it, you know, and that can be kind of
tricky.
Oh, that's
true.
But, yeah.
You keep looking at the container and it's not around. Then you have to peel that label. Good point. The texter says this. By the way, here's our phone number. It's also a text number, 651-461-9226. We always end up having some leftover questions. We want to get as many answered this morning as we can. So call us or text us, 651-461-9226. Texter says the eastern area of Blaine is being taken over by crabgrass. Any suggestions?
Yeah, so I wish John was on today because
turf
he's definitely
guru, yes.
The turf guy. So crabgrass is an annual grass, and so don't try to put any products for pre-emergent. That's not going to help with it. And the best thing you can do right now is we don't want to be spraying when the temperatures are getting warmer out because you can actually damage the turf that you want to have growing there in your lawn or your wherever you're looking at that in Blaine. The best thing to do is help it not to flower or prevent it. So make sure you're mowing. There's always a caveat, right? So we don't want to be mowing when it's really hot out too frequently just because that can stress our wanted turf. So the best thing you can do is wait until the temperatures cool down a little bit. If it's really bothering you, you could sprayed out, I think, in the fall, but really it's going to be about caring for the plants next year because the crabgrass you see right now will not be there next year. It'll just be the seed that will germinate in the spring.
All right. Laura, hang on, please. We're going to take a quick break and be right back on the other side. Let's invite our listeners to join in on this show, 651-461-9226. We call it Smart Garden, presented every week by Great Garage Floors. Stay with us. And welcome back to this portion of our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here with Laura Irish Hansen from the U of M, answering those lawn and garden questions that we have both this morning. Laura, but I wanted to ask you about something that I know you love to do and is make these I can't remember what you call them, but they're brief videos.
Yeah, so they're called Hort Shorts.
Hort Shorts, that's right.
Yeah, and they are on our UMN Extension Yard and Garden YouTube page. And I had a little hiatus for the month of July, but I just made a couple of videos that posted yesterday and one this morning. So they're pretty fun. They're usually under a minute long, and they're just something quick that is something you could be doing in your garden. And really, it's just me outside thinking, oh, what could I film right now? So that's how they're created. I just walk around with my little gimbal.
And how do we find? How does our listeners do? Our listeners find those?
Yeah, so you can go on YouTube, and if you look up Hort H-O-R-T, and then there's a space, short. And we have a whole playlist for them. If you can't find it that way, you can also just look up UMN Extension, Yard and Garden, and we've been posting them on our monthly checklist. So the August checklist should be coming out in the next couple of days, and there will be a link directly to a Hort short.
What a great idea. Love that. Again, if you want to ask Laura a question, either by phone or by text, 651-461-9226. Texter, I know you're going to wish John was with us. Quackgrass, a texter kind of corrected him or herself, meant to say quackgrass and not crabgrass. Now, what is quackgrass?
So quackgrass, we do have a whole page all about quackgrass on extension.umn.edu. So if you type in quackgrass, all one word, you can be sent to our page all about it. Quackgrass is much more aggressive than crabgrass. and that's because the quackgrass actually spreads by rhizomes, which are just specialized stems that run at or underneath the soil surface. So it can quickly outcompete a lot of our other cool season turf grasses. Quackgrass is on the USDA's restricted noxious seed list, so it cannot be in any of your seed mixes you're getting. So it is quite an aggressive plant. I'm just scrolling the page because I was like, oh, yeah, there's a lot of fun pictures on here. But to help you ID the difference, you can look, and there's really nice images on our website so you can see if you actually have quackgrass or not.
I'm going to do that very thing. Extension.umn.edu. We always like to remind folks to check that out. Just a great, a tremendous resource. I'm looking at a text, Laura. This says, I want to trim my large linden tree, removing several lower branches of about 6 inches in diameter. Can I do this now or should I wait?
Yeah. So if it is you're trying to remove them, there's some damage or you're worried for safety reasons, you can definitely remove them now. Just make sure you're making clean pruning cuts. So we do have some images also on our website on how to properly prune and make pruning cuts. So please check that out. If you can hold off until later in the season, that might be preferred. But I do know that there is some research that's been coming out recently that is going to rock horticulture's world, I think most of us, about changing when we're actually pruning trees. Not all trees, but some species. So some species actually may be healing faster with growing season pruning instead of dormant pruning, which is what we normally recommend. So more information to come on that, hopefully.
Yeah. A listener says this, Laura, I bought 4 yellow-flowered potentilla bushes in May. They have few flowers now. May I fertilize them at this late date? If not, how may I help them produce more flowers? The greenery looks healthy.
Yeah, so you may have already been over-fertilizing it just because if you're having lots of good leafy growth, that's excellent. Because when you first plant any type of perennial plants, that first year we really want them to be focusing on putting out more roots and photosynthesizing and having good leaves so that they can then flower and be beautiful for us in the next 2 to 3 years. So I wouldn't be too worried about it. But if you do notice next year that you're not having flowers again, that could mean that there's an excess of nitrogen, because nitrogen will promote leafy growth rather than the production of flowering buds. So definitely get your soil tested, because you might not need to be fertilizing at all for those perennial plants.
I've been meaning to do that, getting my soil tested at the U of M. What is the process, Laura? Can you take us through that?
Yeah, so it's really easy. All you have to do is you go online and they have all the instructions for what you need to do, how you're going to collect those soil samples. And it really depends on how big your garden bed is and how many different tests you want to have done, or if you just want to have one test done. But you just collect a little bit of soil, put it in a container, and then you fill out the form saying, is this a garden bed? You know, is it a field? They have different types of soil tests they'll run. And then you send it in and with your payment, and then they will send you back your results. And typically, it'll tell you if you need to add supplemental nutrients or fertilizer. It'll be there on the results that you get back.
Yeah, pretty reasonable cost, too, as I recall.
Yeah, it's $20 or $25.
Yeah, something like that. What is the best time, Texter says, to transplant rhubarb?
Well, rhubarb is a very amazing, vigorous plant. You can actually divide those crowns now if you're going to keep up on watering them consistently, particularly if we're not getting water every few days. So if you wanted to, you could dig them up and divide them now. You could wait another few weeks, as typically temperatures are a little cooler and we don't stress the plants out as much. But rhubarb's a really resilient plant, and you can pretty much do it whenever you want during the growing season if you keep up on watering.
Okay. Greetings, Dexter says, would there be, maybe could there be, bugs in the potting soil one buys?
Yes, that can happen. Typically for most of the potting mixes that you're going to get, or potting soils, they have been sanitized. So usually that means that they've been heated up to a certain temperature to kill most pathogens and various insects and microorganisms. But sometimes, you know, not everything is killed, or if they're sitting for a long time outside or in warehouses, different insects can get in. So you may see some different insects in those potting mixes. But usually, if you don't see it right away when you're pouring out that potting mix, wherever you're putting it, it's probably just other critters have come in from your landscape into that area.
All right. Laura, let's take a quick break, find out about that smoky weather forecast. We'll do that and come back with the second half of our Smart Garden Show, brought to us by Great Garage Floors. Stay with us. If you're just joining us this morning, glad to have you with us. Laura Irish Hansen from the U of M, answering those lawn and garden questions today, either by phone or text as usual, 651-461-9226. What is that? We mentioned that you office, lucky you, at the farm at the Arb. Tell us what's going on. There's so many things happening. Well, of course, year-round, but this is such a great time of year to stop by.
Oh, yeah. It is absolutely beautiful up at the, well, I always say the farm because I'm at the farm lot, but the old Arboretum grounds. But today at the farm is the Honey Harvest and Flowers for Pollinators Farm Day from 10 to 2. So it's, once you get into the Arboretum, it's a free, a family-friendly event. And you can, there's a little cut flower area that the master gardeners that volunteer with Julie and I at the Foodscape helped plant. And so you can take, you get to cut your own single cut flower from there and learn all about the pollinators. And there's food, and it's just a fun time for all.
And when I was there, I think it must have been a year or more ago, doing a little photography. So it's just beautiful sights. I think there was a wedding going on. I bet you that happens more often than people realize there at the Arboretum.
Yeah. So we get these fun emails that tell us all the major events and just the major ones. And there are usually in the summer, I'd say like 4 to 8 weddings at the Arboretum every week. It's pretty crazy.
Beautiful
place to get married.
Gorgeous. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Get out there if you can. The University of Minnesota Landscape Arboretum, just west on 5. You can avoid the construction there in Eden Prairie. Here's a text that says, I have a Japanese lilac tree. Nothing seems to want to grow underneath it, including grass. Plenty of filtered sunlight, but it is like a dead zone. Is this to be expected around a Japanese lilac tree?
That's really pretty interesting. Some species may not like just the coverage and the amount of water that that tree is probably taking up. And it really depends on your soil type, too. I've seen quite a few different rhizomatous plants that grow just fine under Japanese tree lilacs. So you might just want to try some different plants than the ones you've already put in.
Okay. A listener sent this via text. My phlox are blooming now, but when done, when can they be transplanted?
Did you say phlox?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
I feel like or phloxes. My mic.
Yeah, phloxes.
Is there a plural of phlox?
Nope, we just say phlox.
That's what I thought.
Phlox all the time. So for your phlox, you can divide them they're not quite as intense as rhubarb, where you can do it anytime. I would wait until the weather cools off before you divide any of those clumps. But they're a pretty resilient plant that, as long as, again, you're watering them in and keeping them well watered through the fall, they should be fine.
Here's a lawn question, Laura. When should I aerate and overseed?
Yeah, so we do on the Extension website have a lawn care calendar. So if you look up on the extension.umn.edu and you type in lawn care calendar, it tells you the best time to do those types of tasks and also okay times to do it. So for aerating, it's usually mid-August to mid-October. So that's when I would recommend you do it, because that's what our turf specialists have found is the best time.
And same with the seeding. We always talk about eventually dormant seeding, but that's a good time too, is it not? The window, mid-August, mid-September, end of September, things like that.
Yep, exactly. So just around the same time if you want to seed them, so they germinate now this year, or you can do that dormant seeding later, November, December, before the snow comes in.
Texter is asking about cherry tomatoes in a raised garden. They start to turn red, then they show signs of damage, almost like a small bite, but I know it's not squirrel damage. What could that be?
A small bite in the fruit, so an open wound.
Yeah.
That's really
interesting. Sounds like a critter, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely sounds like some type of, maybe it's a larval, like a caterpillar that's taking a small bite out of it. That's really, there are some other insects that will do that as well. I wonder if it's a bird. Wow, I'm gonna have, I have many thoughts right now. It could be a bird if it's like a perfect little poked hole that just, they could be doing that. But you know, if you're trying to protect your cherry tomatoes, you could put some type of netting, insect netting around it, or some people will use bird netting if you want to prevent that from happening.
And I would imagine, as you know, Laura, we have very smart listeners, and I bet you somebody has seen what critter that might have been, possibly. Well, we'll see before the show's end. This listener has a new 4 foot by 8 foot raised bed garden. Would like to fill with soil. At the local garden store, they have raised bed soil, soil for container plants, garden soil, topsoil. What do you recommend that this listener fill that raised bed with, type of soil?
Yeah, a 4 by 8 foot bed is quite large. So you have a lot more, what I would consider a lot more options for filling that space with. It depends also on how deep it is, that container. So if it's a pretty, if it's only like 12 inches or so, you want to make sure you have something that has really good drainage. So when you go and look at that raised bed soil from the local garden center, see if there's any pieces of bark or larger pieces of any type of material, because that will help prevent compaction from happening in that container. If you do have a deeper bed, like say it's 2 feet high or 3 feet high, you can actually put some sticks and other things in the bottom portion, just a few inches deep, like I would say anywhere from 3 to 7 inches deep, before you start filling in, just to help prevent that compaction from happening too quickly. But yeah, in the bigger beds, you can actually use more potting mix or potting soil, excuse me, than a soilless mix.
Very good. Let's grab a phone call. Becky's calling in from North St. Paul. Becky, thanks for your patience. What is your question for Laura?
I have marigolds that I have had for years and years. I use the seeds over and over every year. Last year was the first year that they got so tall. They were like 4.5 feet tall, and they didn't have any blooms on them. So I put some organic fertilizer on, and then they bloomed. They got to be about 5 feet tall. I stood in the garden with them. And this year, the same thing. They're 4.5 feet tall now. Blooms are starting a little bit. I'm thinking because they can't bloom because there's too much green growing. But what could have changed after years of normal use? And the seeds are, you know, each year I put new seeds and take them and use them over again.
Wow, that's really fun. I love marigolds because you can easily save the seed, and they do self-seed for those of you who may be putting marigolds in your landscape. They will just come up with new plants the following year when they drop their seeds. I'm wondering if you live near other people who may have had marigolds because they can cross-pollinate, and so you might have gotten some that potentially pollen from taller types of marigolds got in, and that's why those ones are the what you're seeing mostly now. But yeah, that's really interesting because usually they're pretty, they usually just self-pollinate. And so you're going to get the same type of marigold year after year. But yeah, the biggest thing I would see is that would have to be something about cross-pollination, particularly if you're taking it from many different plants and saving seeds from more than just one plant. If it was a single plant that you save seeds from, there could have been some mutation that happened just by happenstance, genetic mutation that happened that caused it to be larger, but that would be pretty rare.
Okay. Texter says, some of my cucumber leaves are getting covered with yellow spots. A sunflower plant nearby has a couple of leaves with them also. What's causing it, and what do I do about it?
There are many, many types of diseases that cause spots on our plants. So the two plants you've described are in different plant families. So likely it's not the exact same disease on those plants, but it might be very related diseases for them. If those yellow spots are starting to become necrotic or dying, that you might want to remove those and make sure that you're getting them away so it isn't potentially spreading up the same plants or to other neighboring plants. But if the plants aren't dying and the leaves aren't dying from those spots, usually you can just leave it.
Okay. Listener says this via text, I have a white powdery substance on my 3-foot pine tree. It's a long needle pine. What is it? How do I get rid of it?
Ooh. My brain is blanking right now, so I'm going to come back to that one after
sure.
The next break, if that's all right.
Yeah, we're going to break here in a moment. But here's another question before we break. Are bluebells an invasive plant? I'd like to bring them up to Bemidji area, but don't want to bring up a bad plant.
Ooh, bluebells. The common bluebell. That also
another research.
That is not one. Yep.
Right.
I think there are native. I know there are native ones, but I don't. And I think there are non-native ones. So I'd have to see a picture, I think, before I could tell them yes or no.
Oh, sure, that's a good point. Well, there's access to Ask the Master Gardener too on the website,
yeah.
Right? They could send a picture.
100%. Thank you, Denny, for that reminder. Yes, please do that, actually, because they can help you out to see which one you have.
And what's the process? Of course, extension.umn.edu. And then what does the listener do?
Yeah, and you just you can scroll on the page or just type in Ask a Master Gardener, and there's a whole web page dedicated to asking a Master Gardener a direct question.
All right, that's great. All right, very good. Hang on, Laura. We'll let you do a little research, and we'll take this quick break and be back on the other side with more of our Smart Garden Show. Laura Irish Hansen from the U of M answering those questions for us this morning here on Smart Garden, brought to us by my friends at Great Garage Floors. Back with more Smart Garden with Laura Irish Hansen from the U of M answering those lawn and garden questions this morning. And we have many. But you had kind of a follow-up after your massive research, right, Laura?
Yeah. So, sorry, I blanked out. I was like, white powder. That's kind of odd for pines. But started just thinking a little bit more about it. It could actually be from a scale infestation. So if you look at the needles, you might need to get a magnifying glass or use a magnifying apps on your phone. And if you see little kind of circular dots on the needles, those might be a scale insect. And so those are really difficult to control because they have like this armored protective shell that they pretty much adhere to the needles with. So we do have a webpage on what you do for the scale insects and the best management strategies. So that might be something you're seeing because they can actually leave a sticky residue that ends up allowing for mold to grow on your pine needles.
All right. Texter says this, my poblano pepper plant is 3 feet tall, but the flowers all die before producing peppers. What can be done?
Yeah, so a few things could be going on with that pepper plant. They might not actually be, the flowers might not be being fertilized. And by that, I mean the pollen is not getting into the female tissues to actually go and start helping with fruit set. It also could be an issue, a nutrient issue can cause that to happen for the blossoms to drop off. And inconsistent watering is another common reason that you're going to see some of those flowers drop off of those plants. So particularly if you have them in containers, make sure you're giving them consistent moisture once the flowers start forming.
Okay. This listener is completely new to growing pumpkins, planted June 11th. Only have I seen two orange flowers on two of the vines so far, but all the vines are thriving. Texter says, did I miss the window to pollinate the rest of the vines or any other suggestions to get the pumpkins out of the vines?
Yeah, so the pumpkins are really fun because they actually have two different types of flowers on a single plant. They have male flowers and female flowers. And usually the first flowers that start opening up on our pumpkin vines are all male flowers, so they're never going to form a fruit. They're just there to be the pollen source for the female flowers. So if you do see some more flowers coming up, what I want you to do is look just underneath those beautiful kind of orangey colored flowers, and if it looks like a thin kind of just a regular stem of green, you know you have a male flower. If there looks like there is a itty-bitty fruit underneath that flower, that tells you it's a female flower. And it's not a fruit yet. It's just the ovary of that flower. So it needs pollen to enable it to actually grow into a pumpkin fruit. So once you see more flowers, that's what you first want to look for is, do you have male or female flowers? If you don't have any more flowers forming, we are getting kind of to that crunch time in most of Minnesota for our growing season to get those to mature. You could try, it might be a fertilizer issue where it doesn't actually have enough phosphorus potentially to help promote flower growth. And if it has excess nitrogen, that can also be inhibiting that flower production.
All right, we have time for a couple more, I believe. Texas, is it good to deadhead a stilbe? Will it bloom again this season, do you think?
It could. It depends on where you're at in Minnesota. But yeah, you can definitely deadhead that a stilbe and see if new flower buds will push out this year for you.
Okay. Here's a compost question. Generally, Texter says, I don't throw weeds in my compost bin in my yard, but if I don't really use the soil for a while from it, will those weed seeds be killed?
So it depends on the type of weeds that you have in the seed, because some of those seeds are still going to be viable for many, many years. If your compost pile in your backyard does not get very hot, like the commercial compost piles usually do, I would not add those weed seeds to the compost pile, just because you'll likely end up spreading that wherever you're going to be putting that compost. So if you are making sure and you have a thermometer and you're making sure it is getting up to temp, it would be safe to put those weed seeds in your home compost.
Arboretum question, believe it or not, when is the optimal time to come to the arboretum to see the ornamental grasses?
Oh my gosh, I feel like Mary Meyer sent that question in. I doubt she did. I actually went on a walk yesterday, which is why my voice is a little scratchy, because I did a very long walk. And I purposely went to the ornamental grasses because they are gorgeous right now. A lot of them are starting to bloom. So my favorite time to see the ornamental grasses is pretty much August, September, October, because that is when a lot of them are really just in their full glory.
Oh, yeah. Great time. We have so many texts. Does lawn aeration help with mole removal? Moles? No, I don't think those, they don't go that deep.
No, aeration's usually only a few inches, and those moles are, they're good at it, tunneling.
Yeah. So unfortunately, otherwise I'd be aerating a lot. let's see. 4 years ago, they must mean 4 years instead of the number four. I have made my own weed killer using vinegar, salt, and dish detergent. I put it in a spray bottle, use it year-round. Very effective without using herbicides. What do you think of that? I've seen that before.
Yeah, so I have not seen actual data about the effectiveness of using that and what the long-term implications are in the soil for any residuals that might be there from the vinegar and the salt in particular. So I would just be really careful depending on where you're spraying that, because you could also, for those who haven't done it or are new to dealing with weeds, you might accidentally injure the plants that you want to keep. So if it's working for you, you know, I'm very happy. I just don't know about the data and the implications in the soil for any buildup of salt.
Does a younger Japanese yew need fertilizer? If so, what type?
I would definitely, I know I keep saying it, but get your soil tested, because you might not need to add any type of fertilizer to it. The best thing for your evergreens is make sure you are watering them, particularly going into the winter time before the soil freezes. Last year, we did not have very much moisture. If we all remember, we were kind of in that dry period in a drought-like conditions, and that really harmed our evergreens, and lots of winter injury. Because they went in kind of droughty into the winter. So if you did put in a yew, make sure you're watering it really well all fall.
One of our listeners sent in this note. Remember, we were talking about that pine, white stuff on that pine. The texter sent this: pine pollen is white.
Yep. It could be the pollen, but it's usually that's already shed by now, because I thought of that too. It's kind of like a yellowy white color. It depends on it. It also could just be pine residue, but because it sounded like it was powdery, that's the only reason I didn't think it was the resin from the pine either.
We have less than a minute to go, Laura. Maybe we can do one quick one here. Texter has a large little princess spirea bush and a 3-foot tall astilbe bush that we would like to split. Is it okay to do that now? Or wait?
I would wait just a couple more weeks, actually. I would wait till mid to late August to do that.
All right. Well, a couple of notes before you head out, and thank you for being here. It's always fun having you on the show, Laura. And to get to the Arboretum, number one, get to the Arboretum whenever you can. And you got to get tickets and do it online. That's the process, right?
I definitely would. You'll save $5 if you do it ahead. And if you're not the driver of your vehicle, you can do it if you're a passenger while on your way there.
not as you're driving. And by all means, if you have not yet checked out the university website, do that, extension.umn.edu. Laura, always fun, and I know we'll be talking soon.
Yeah, thanks so much, Denny.
You bet. Thank you. Laura Irish Hansen from the U of M. Get ready for Home Improvement Talk that comes up next year. On CCO, Andy Lindis will be in studio. More areas of smoke today and tomorrow, maybe even a little bit on Monday morning. Our high today near 80, right now 65 degrees on CCO.